Gorgeous day to be sensitive. I really appreciate in practice how we're developing this sensitivity, but also the capacity to be sensitive. It means the stability of mind to allow for beauty to emerge, arise, and pass in some form, but also the capacity to be sensitive to ache or pain, or with a stable, sometimes courageous heart, sometimes a patient heart, sometimes honest heart. So different qualities at different times come to accompany us, depending on what's happening. Joy, rejoicing, when the experience is nurturing, enjoyable in some way. And compassion, when the experience is a challenging one, confounding, confusing one. So the capacity to feel the world in all kinds of ways, inner world, outer world, being in contact with what we love or like, being in contact with what is difficult to be with. And the more we practice here these days, there's probably another kind of quality of mind that develops, is the pliability, malleability of the mind. Flexibility. It's adaptability, resiliency, maybe. So the mind that can allow life to take the form it takes and to meet it in a steady way, in an open way. Part of that pliability might be the capacity and the encountering difficulty in the body or in the heart, the capacity to go and nourish the mind, recognize what is open or vast or nourishing, invite, cultivate, bring in the nourishment of bird song in the field of I don't know if you're hanging out a bit in the underworld, the shadow side, if that's a good image, then the capacity may even in there to resource, refresh a little bit with kindness, refresh the mind, the heart, and in well-being, the capacity to not dismiss or hate, defend against fear, the unpleasant, the little cognitive dissonance. If you're in a good mood, not to hate a sudden sound that would shake the pleasantness in there. The capacity to allow life to happen as it does, to meet it carefully. And sometimes you might notice, might be noticed, the congealing, the forming of a strong sense of I around something, a sensation, an opinion, a thought, I want this, a perception, I am such a bad meditator, I am the best meditator. And so if the sense of I forms clearly, then not rejecting it, becoming interested in that ephemeral formation, live as it's happening, what a chance. And noticing maybe the absence of it, oh, no strong I-ing right now, my-ing. Just body sitting, breathing, hearing. If it's of interest to you, it doesn't have to be the foreground of your experience this morning or today, but it might be of interest. The appearance and the disappearance of moi, I, mine, in me. So maybe some playfulness around this, or curiosity around this, or compassion when suffering from severe identification or fusion, when defining oneself by something. This is subtle stuff. Sometimes that's actually, it's not subtle at all. So you, it might be in your in the field of your consciousness during the day, the practice this morning, or it might not. But just before entering the silence, maybe a little exploration exercise, just if you want to participate. If you want to, I invite you to think voluntarily a few times the following thought, a phrase, sentence. I am, and put your full name there, first name, family name. I am such and such, and I am meditating right now. So experience that thought, inviting you to put down paper and pen during meditation and experience that thought a few times. Just feel it, if it feels real, reality, a good description of it. I am so and so, and I am meditating right now. So to experience conscious thinking, what is the experience of thinking when I think that thought? If you want to repeat the thought a few times, but remove the last part of the sentence. If you want, just keep I am and your full name and feel that. Now think that thought a few more times, but without the family name. Leave gaps between the words if you want, just to see what's happening in the gap. And drop the first name, just keep the two first words, I am, a few times, feel that. Drop the verb if you want, keep just the first word of the sentence. And drop that word if you want. see what happens if you don't make sensations mine. Just allow them to be there in the field as a sound would be. What happens to sensations or emotions or thoughts if you don't claim them as mine, appropriate them? Just allow them to be known, to be experienced, to be in the field. Even thoughts that seem very important or serious or heavy or sticky. What if you release them from the ownership? Just allow them to appear. Live and maybe pass by. See if it can give you give some buoyancy of heart. Maybe even the heavy thoughts might have a lightness to them that was unrecognized. Mirage-like, appearing real, solid, heavy, mine. But maybe not exactly. Just a few more moments of releasing ownership, appropriation, just as an exploration. What if this is not my body, but a body? Not my thoughts, but thoughts. Not my mood or emotion, but an emotion present, a mood, a quality of mind. Even maybe releasing ownership for a moment as an exploration, releasing ownership of knowing, knowing happening. So what I've noticed maybe in me and maybe in others, and you might recognize something like this in yourself or maybe not. Sometimes in meditation we think and we'll report maybe like, I want to stop thinking, but it keeps thinking. Huh? And so as I'm kind of victim of that, you know, I would really like to be calm and quiet, but it keeps thinking in my mind. And it's interesting in the Buddhist psychology when it describes that actions of body and speech and mind are intentional. So it seems to be saying somewhere that maybe there's something intentional happening. Interesting. So what I've seemed to maybe see, elements of research for us here as we sit and walk today, sometimes it feels like thinking, telling a story, having an opinion, describing, narrating, having preferences, expressing preferences in one's mind is a really good device to keep a sense of self going. And if I was to stop this, maybe there would be some loss of identity, and that's scary for me. So I prefer to describe what will happen next. You know, so I'm sitting here, the bell will ring, I'm going to go walking. This time I will do it. And because just the silence would be maybe uncomfortable, maybe there would even be an association that that is maybe unconscious, but that might be somewhere in there that I know when thinking stop, it's because I'm paralyzed with fear. And that might be an association somewhere in there. I don't know. Check it out if that's at play for you. And I think that it might be worth going in that loss of identity. But it might be good to do it with titration, meaning not stopping thinking for the rest of the sit or the day or the life, but saying, just for a second. And then I can comment again, you know, that was interesting. I like that, you know, defining oneself. I like that. I exist. I'm liking that. I don't like that. And for a moment, stepping again, just putting it down, just to see, yes, it's going to be really scary if I'm not positioning myself in some way, what I think about something, you know. But let's try it. And maybe in that passage, especially if I know that I don't have to stay there, that I can come out and describe again, that might create a feeling of safety. And then I can go back in there and feel. And maybe what initially is scary and unknown, and am I going to disappear? Annihilation, something. Yeah? Like, it's going to be a big empty abyss, you know? We might discover actually that, I don't know, one could discover that there is fullness there. Resonance, vibration, like life, hearing, knowing is happening. Anyway, that's one way that one could explore this a little bit. So we have time for some questions about practice, if there are any. Few words of clarification, maybe you would want on something. The subject that I talked about last night and again this morning is tricky, it's delicate. And so it would make sense that it would bring up objection or nuances. Yes. Yeah, so the relationship between loving the self and not self. It's tonight's talk, so stay tuned. But I'll say a few words anyway, because the day is long when you do nothing all day. So what could I say about this? Yeah, Heather talked about, maybe briefly, and she might talk about this more tonight, but about two kinds of realities that coexist. Maybe there's more. But that's the thing with the, when we get acquainted with ephemerality, then maybe we can allow for perceptions to change and not get stuck in one kind of perception. You know, as I sit here over the week, I see that sometimes I feel I have value, you know, and sometimes I have no value, you know. I'm a good teacher, I'm a bad teacher, I'm a good practitioner, I'm a bad practitioner. I'm good at serving soup for myself. I'm really bad at serving soup for myself, you know? And I don't fall into the rigidity, hopefully, or just for a few seconds, you know? And so I can allow the different perceptions to arise. You know, I appear to myself as bad teacher, as good teacher. And I can have, you know, playfulness, compassion around this, oh, you know, and honesty, all this. And so the sense of self is not totally rigid. I can allow the different perceptions. So there's a way we can perceive reality as I'm here and you're there. And it's extremely important to see reality as this, like this. Huh? And also, sometimes the perceptions might be otherwise, you know. It might feel like the boundaries of my body dissolve a little bit, eyes close, really concentrated. It's not so much Pascal personality, it's more like a field of knowing. Yeah, it's not so defined in this way. And the more I practice, I can allow the perceptions to be like this, and then, whoops, I can come back and say, okay, in 5 minutes it's the meeting, and be really... So in the metta practice, when we're sending wishes of well-being to ourselves, so we're using that level of perception of I and you, and I'm sending metta to you. That's how I understand it. So I'm using conventional reality, one level of perception of reality, to cultivate beautiful qualities of mind or allow them to emerge, you know. And... Yeah, and in the same way, I could be sitting here and practice metta, but not so directed to myself or another, but just hanging out in care, you know, and then the inside, outside might, these distinctions might kind of fall away a little bit, and just, oh, kindness, you know, it's not I am kind, or I'm sending kindness to myself, you know, but just kindness is there. So, just a few words. Is that okay? Good. So relieving to not be stuck, not having to believe completely as an absolute truth our thoughts about ourselves, our thoughts about others, about what the past is, or the future. Will be, you know, to allow, oh, this is a ephemeral vision. Might be so, might not be so. I've noticed that in discouragement, everything has ever failed for me. This is how I view my past, you know. But in good mood, then, in gratitude, wow, I've been so well accompanied all my life. So how the past even is dynamic, fluid, changing. No, information is would be like reading a Dharma book where it says there's three levels of understanding, you know? Like, you know? Like, for example, somebody tell you want to go to, I don't know, let's say you hear there's a pool here. There's not, I'm just making this up. Well, I don't know that there is. I don't think there is, but you know the pool, you would say, oh, where? Like, let me give you information about the pool. So you go up this way, then you turn left, then past the door with the yellow, you turn right, you know, so that's information. So as when we say there are universal characteristics in every phenomena, they're impermanent, and they're not self. That's an information. But the, you see, it's limited. Huh? But the thinking about not self, that's the other level. Not self. Is it true? Oh, it's true that I've owned things and people have taken them sometimes. That proves to me that it was not absolutely mine. Huh? Because I have a bicycle in Montreal, and regularly somebody explains to me that it was not absolutely my bicycle. You know, they go, and so if I don't understand reality and it's all its different levels, it's going to be very aggravating for me. If I do understand that I can't own anything, you know, so this is thinking, I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking, I'm putting words, and then meditation suddenly is to perceive hearing as an event that can't be on, you know, and dislocating, liberating myself from the rigid notion of self. So these are the three levels. Is that helpful a little bit? So, okay, good. So tonight's talk, stay tuned. But as I have the microphone, and Heather has not the microphone. And as we agreed, is that okay with you? Thank you. So your question is about you saying, I have the difficulty to remove I from the experience. And can you say a few words about this? The first thing I'll just say is, it's not like it should not be happening. We should easily, it would be easy to understand like, oh, I shouldn't I anymore, you know? That's just another injunction, just another stress, you know? This is not the spirit here. The spirit here, as I understand it, is a spirit of research. We're just curious about events, phenomena, and how they're perceived. And so if I'm sitting here and there's a sense of I, a feeling of I, an understanding of I, like however it appears, then I get interested in that. Just, oh, yeah, it's really I. And then by paying attention, something will be revealed. Oh, I'm knowing, but the sensation's not I. Or, yeah, really my hand. So it's just an area to become aware of. We don't have to change anything when we're meditating. We're just really interested in how it appears, how it is right now. And so if you see I is right in the middle of the whole thing, then yes, you're lucky. Because there's a formation there. There's something happening that can be known exactly as it is. And in time, I would imagine if we put our interest into this, if it's of interest to us, it might not be. Then we'll make discoveries. You know, like in this story where this biology teacher tells the student, you know, the student is really lucky to be working with this famous biologist. And the biologist said, okay, so I put a dead fish here, and I want you to just observe the dead fish this morning. And the student starts looking at the dead fish, and the teacher comes back an hour later and says, so what did you see? Well, it's dead. You know? It's like, okay, good beginning. Stay there for an hour or more. And then the teacher comes back like, oh my God, I noticed that this and that and that and that. And the teacher said, oh, really good. So the next 2 hours, just keep watching and observing. And then there's like waves of doubt. Am I doing the watching well? Boredom? Why am I watching this? You know? Do you see? I don't want to make any comparison with what we're doing, but, you know? And by applying attention at some point, something that was unnoticed, oh my God, I thought it was symmetrical, but it's not actually exactly symmetrical. And this at the beginning of the fish is not like this at the end of the... And things starts to be really juicy about it. And the teacher comes at lunch and is like, really, really good. So this afternoon and this evening, you'll be just observing the fish. And so if you stay there, for sure you're going to make discoveries about that fish, you know? It's going to change after a few hours too. And so it's the same with this. If there's an area of our humanity, our experience that we gather the mind enough to make some stability, of course if I'm really busy in my opinions and wanting to be back home and all this is too much subtlety. Like, we don't even try to go there. That's why we're trying here to stabilize the mind, which sometimes we can do and sometimes we can't because of inner or outside conditions. But I'm really talking about something subtle. So it takes a certain level of, you know, stability of attention, quietness. And then we just notice what is there as it is. And if at some point it dissolves in some ways for a few seconds, whoops, it's not recognizable, then you just notice as that. And then for sure at some point it will congeal again. Me, my body, when do they ring the darn bell, you know? Check. And so, yeah, so that would is what I would say about this, okay? Okay, so, yeah, a day of practice. Invite you to bring great care. This is really ephemeral. We're in the really heart of the retreat here. It's going to start dissolving in no time. And so let's really honor this today. You know, during meditation, let's be attentive. No drinking, no eating candies, no writing. And let's not be kind of hung up. That's just one more thing not to cling to. So it's this middle path, you know, of being really attentive and not judging, you know, but careful. In the walking, there's a lot of that will appear. You know, you're walking, there's just placing, you know, stepping, and suddenly you see somebody in the corner of your eye. How do I look? You know, am I doing right? Am I guilty? You'll see, there's a self. Look at moi. I'll teach you about walking. You know? So just see this. You're just suddenly, I is born because wants this now. You know? And see its appearance and disappearance. Okay? Have a good day of practice. Thank you. So a practice leader. So we need a practice leader. Yeah. Thanks, Jillian. So anybody would like to try the self? Put the self here. Okay. Thank you so much. Thanks. Okay. Have a good day.